Did you experience loss at a young age or struggle with compounded grief? Let us introduce you to Carm. She's a registered psychotherapist and founder of Girls Gotta Heal.
Carm's mission is to help young women navigate loss with resilience and grace. Don't miss this conversation for some great practical resources and insights into her unique healing tools.
Welcome to the Two Girls with Grief podcast, the podcast where we share our real and raw experiences with grief. Whether it's tears or laughter, or maybe a little bit of both, we're here to figure it out in real time. We are your hosts. I'm Kendall Rogers.
And I'm Rachel Dwyer.
And while we're not professionals, we are professional grievers.
Every Tuesday, we bring you honest conversations that break down the stigma of grief, one episode at a time, because no one should have to grieve alone. So grab a cup of coffee, settle in, and let's navigate this journey together.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Carm. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We've been following your Girls Gotta Heal account for a while now, so we're so excited to finally get you on the podcast and learn what you've been building. So what inspired you to start Girls Gotta Heal, and how would you say that it's evolved over the years?
So Girls Gotta Heal started quite a few years ago now. It really started from me reaching a point in my healing journey with my grief. I had experienced a lot of losses, including the loss of a friend, my dad being a huge one. And I had reached a point in my healing where I felt really empowered with my story. I think that there's a really special point when we do the healing work where we're like, you know what, I really own my story. I'm doing the work. I feel good about that. And I was just ready to share my story and connect with others, because for a while I could not find anything on social media that connected to my experience. The age range was a little different. The type of losses were different. So I wanted to just create something that I needed, essentially.
So you've experienced a lot of loss. You've obviously gone through a lot of grief. What were the first steps that you took to explore your grief in this mental health journey and beginning to deal with all this loss and grief that you were experiencing?
Me, in my experience, it took me quite a long time to reach that point in dealing with my grief. And I had listened to one of your podcast episodes, and I know you had experienced something similar too. I think it was Rachel, like, just saying that it took you quite a while to actually start doing the work. So that was my experience as well. But for me, I had my first step really was reaching out to a counselor at my university and just getting the courage to show up every week. And that turned into me showing up for myself. But yeah, there was a lot of like stigma in my family about talking about mental health and grief. So I really felt like if I wasn't going to do the work and I wasn't going to make the change, then nothing was going to happen. And I was just going to stay stuck and just be in darkness for a long time.
Yeah, the delayed dealing with it is something that me and Kendall both did. Mine was longer because my losses were farther away, but we ended up kind of on the same path at the right time. And that's how we met, like in our grief support group, is like we both joined at the same time, feeling that same thing, like we need to do something different and start dealing with our grief. And that's when we joined the grief support group. So we both were a little bit delayed. I win the award for the longest as for dealing with it. So talking about that compounded grief, I saw that you lost your friend, you lost your father and your grandpa and your uncle, and you're a very close, tight-knit family. How did you handle that compounded grief? Because I know I didn't handle it. I probably just didn't handle it. I don't know, well or bad. I just like didn't handle it. But looking at one, how you handled it at the time, but now like years later, do you wish you would handle it differently? Because sometimes I try to look back like, could I have done it sooner? And I'm like, I actually don't think I could have. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I also did not handle it. I think when you go through multiple losses and trauma, that it's just a numbing feeling. And how that looks like is different for each person. And for me, I just went on autopilot. I tried to, at the time, do things that I thought were normal for an 18-year-old. And then there were other times where I isolated completely, and both of those didn't feel good. So I don't know, like, if I would have done anything different, because I've reached a point where I'm really at peace with my journey. And I think my younger self did the best job that she possibly could have done.
That's a good way to word it. I try to give myself grace for that too, because I'm like, could I have come out earlier? I don't know that I could have. It's a lot. It's when people keep dying, you're like, I don't know how I'm supposed to handle that. So I definitely relate to that feeling.
And I think for me, there's moments where I'm human too, and I compare myself to my peers and other people and things that, you know, they're doing and places that they're at in their life. And I really feel like at times I'm behind. But there was so much that I was going through that my peers, my friends were not at the time. And that put me at a disadvantage. That stunted my development. Yes, it's taken me a lot longer to reach some of the places I wanted to. But I also, like I said, wouldn't change the journey at all.
I think there could be another conversation about grief, like changing your life. Like me and Kendall talk about that a lot. It just changes like what's important to you and what interests you. But then you see your friends that are like maybe climbing the corporate ladder or doing all these things that you're not doing because you've just been doing different stuff. And it's hard to not compare. But at the same time, you're like, well, you didn't have both your parents and then your sister died in 4 years. So like maybe it's okay. Like I'm doing the best I can and I'm trying to do something positive. And like, you know, Kendall's also passionate about a lot of things too. And career wise, it just makes you think about things differently for sure.
Yeah, we've talked about how do you even like date in that time period. And I was like, I was so focused on life and death situations. The dating pool was not even a thing I could tackle at the time because I was just so overwhelmed with dealing with what you deal with when you're watching somebody slowly die. Like it's a real heavy experience.
Yeah, I definitely connect with that too.
You mentioned in your blog that you were holding out for hope in all those years that your father was sick. Rachel and I both have similar experiences with that, with like dealing with anticipatory grief and just how do you maintain that hope. And then for that to fall through at the end, and it's like the ultimate, it's like, it feels like the most ultimate like betrayal or letdown. Like thinking like if you work hard enough, you try hard enough, you pour enough love into the situation, like you're going to come out good on the other side. And in all our situations, it sounds like it's safe. So can you talk more about what that was like when you have to face like that heartbreak at the end of the road when that hope like doesn't turn out the way you hoped for?
Yeah. You know what? No one has really ever asked me this question before, like not even in conversation with friends. So it's really me back and just remembering that feeling. And I think that was probably one of the most difficult times and feelings that I've ever experienced in my life. Because for me, we were really focusing on the progress and like, you know, dad's going to come home. But then that would shift into, okay, if he does get better, things are going to look different. So it was such an emotional roller coaster. And then when it finally took a turn for the worse, it was just such emotional torture. It was the most devastating thing. And you think about everything comes flooding in. You start thinking about, he's not going to be here for this moment. He's not going to be here for this. And then everything's going to change. So, I would say anticipatory grief is really tough, and it's something that it's really hard to prepare for. It made me realize like some harsh realities of life. And at the time I was 17, 18 years old. So I just had such tunnel vision. When you're younger, you don't really see the world in the way that you do now as an adult. So that was kind of the turning point where I'm like, my whole belief system is like shattered. You have this belief that like, you know, good things happen to good people. And like, if you just pray about it, you be positive about it, it's going to work out. And like, we're going to come out on the end. And it was just like, what? That doesn't happen. That's not a thing. Yeah. That's not happening. So that was really hard to accept.
That's something that me and Kendall talk about too, is like trying to channel that lucky girl syndrome feeling, manifest stuff. And it's like you try to rewire your brain to only think positive things and to like good things are coming and it's all going to work out. But it's really hard to, one, I don't think people look at my life and say like, she's lucky. Like Kendall lost her dad. Is like, are people going to say that's lucky? But then to train your mind, like everything's going to work out when you've experienced it in such a high degree that it doesn't always work out. And in a way that is extremely painful and that doesn't go away. It's really hard to be like, no, good things are coming. And you know, I'm going to be lucky and I'm going to attract all these things. It's really hard to like pull yourself up and think that, but it's like a constant mind shift for me to do that. But I'm like really trying to be like, good things are coming and we're putting good things out there and it's all going to come back.
Yeah, I honestly think that there needs to be more of like a well-accepted balance between that and also sitting in your feelings, and that it's very okay to be sad. Because I think when people experience loss, grief, trauma, something really like profound and huge, they jump to like, okay, I need to do something. Like, I need to find a solution to that. I need to be better. I need to like, it's like, it's okay to just exist and just be like, you're fine, you know? Like, you need to be able to feel what you're feeling and then work toward that manifestation and all that. But you can't rush those things either. Like, you have to be able to be okay sitting in discomfort. And a lot of people are not.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I feel like in that anticipatory time frame, it's like there are high highs and there are low lows. And I have never felt such a range of emotions, even in that short frame of time, but even in a day. It's like you get really good news about their progress and their health, and then something detrimental will happen. And it's like, that's how quickly things can change.
Yeah.
In that time period before like someone passes. It's just that drastic of an emotional shift.
Like, I'm just like thinking back, like, oh man, those were all hard times. It took me until probably like last year to, I think, sit in my feelings the most. And I've said, like, I haven't cried as much as I have in the past year, but I've also feel like I felt happier. Like, it's a weird thing of just like letting myself feel the emotions and let it out when I need to and being okay that like this is just a part of my life. But then I also like feel the happiness more too. So it's like a weird balance, but like it makes sense to me now that I'm kind of on this side of things. So I'm excited to hear about these, the next things that you've been creating, which is first was the affirmation journal for women. So I want to hear how you started that. And then afterwards, I want to learn about connecting through grief, your deck cards that you made. But first, can you tell us what inspired you to write the affirmation journal for women?
So the affirmation journal for women, that came at a time in my life, and also the progression of GGH of when I started, a lot of the content was focused on just the negative emotions of grief and sadness and working with that, accepting it. And I kind of went into this different version of myself where I was making really empowering changes in my life. I had left a job, had zero plan, and was betting on myself. And I'm like, I really want to lean into this book and creating action, because for so long I spent a lot of time creating content around working toward acceptance. And for me, I was at a point where I was really accepting of the things that have happened to me and at peace with my journey and working on myself. So I'm like, okay, action is next. And I think affirmations are a really great way to rework how we speak to ourselves. Even if you don't believe it all the way in the moment, it's a practice and it really contributes to our self-worth, self-esteem. So this journal contains 40 affirmations, and within the book, there are journal prompts, activities that really like pair affirmation with action. So you can say your affirmations, which are great, but pairing it with action really like levels it up a notch. So that's what you can expect in the affirmation journal. It's something nice to chip away at every night, like just focusing on one of the affirmations and the activities. I really wanted to put the focus on empowering people wherever they were at in their journey and whatever they experienced, not even necessarily grief, but just life transitions, womanhood, and give them something to really work on.
That's amazing. I love affirmations. I try to do them more, but I think the action part is also like a very necessary part, because you can say all the things, but if you're doing nothing, I don't think that things are going to come towards
you.
I mean, maybe some people, but I think it's more than just putting it out there. It's like you putting yourself out there and doing the work. So it is a combination, which I do think is often overlooked. It's like, it's not just saying the thing. It's saying it so often that you start believing it and then you start taking action. So that's amazing. And we'll link it in our show notes as well. But so now I'm excited to learn about the Connecting Through Grief deck card, and we can test out two cards.
Yeah, so the deck, that kind of evolved through just these feelings and hearing from the GGH community, similar experiences, what I experienced, that people didn't feel comfortable having conversations about their grief within their home, within their relationships. And I thought creating a card deck would be a really nice icebreaker. I've created the prompts for you. You just have to go through them, and it really gives people the flexibility to use the deck however they want. If you're really in a space right now with your healing where you just want to zone in and focus on yourself, you don't really want to be talking to anybody about it, you can use them as journal prompts, or you can use them one-on-one with like your partner, or you can use them in a group with your family. So there's a lot of flexibility with it. But a lot of the questions, they're not necessarily just focused on grief. They're focused on your relationship with yourself, which I am a complete broken record about in all of my content. I always say it goes back to you, and it's your responsibility to work on your relationship with yourself. Nothing else is going to work out unless you really tune into yourself. So a lot of these questions are prompting you to look inward and see what you need.
That's so true. It took me a while to get to that feeling. So, or like not thinking about like how much work you actually have to do on yourself. It's tiring. So,
yes. So this is the deck, the front of the deck.
Ooh, and I love the colors.
Yeah,
I know. It's really pretty.
Oh, gold. Ah, love it.
I'll pull two cards. And
so excited.
If your tears could talk, what would they say?
Oh, God.
Oh, the gasp.
I was like, there's too many of us on the floor. Like, what would they say? I feel like that brings up so many emotions. Kendall, is something coming to your mind first?
Yeah. Well, like Rachel said, we're kind of a couple years away from our grief. So I think this question would be very different if I answered this immediately after my loss. But right now, like where I am in life, I would say like the tears I should be shedding right now should be for happy things. Like they should be happy tears and like joyful tears. And not tears of stress or not tears of like feeling worthless right now. Like, I think those are what my tears would say.
That's great.
I think for me, my tears now, I mean, I think it's more like, it's almost healing in a way. Like, you're always going to miss your family. You're always going to wish they were here. There's no cure for that. And it's just sometimes when I'm really missing the most, it's like that's when the tears come. And it's not like a long cry. It's kind of just like a short, like you're releasing the valve, which is something that someone in our grief support group says. And it's true. It's like sometimes you just kind of need to like open the valve a little bit and just let it out. And then you feel better and you feel almost like a weight is off your shoulders. So I feel like that's more where my tears are now, where it's just like I can address and like accept that I really miss them. And when I need to just like let that emotion out, I will. So I feel like they're kind of like healing. It's like coming to peace that the tears don't mean that you're just like a sad, sad person. It just means that you have sadness as part of your life and your story, but it's not the only thing. So I think it's now at this point, it's more of like, I can acknowledge that that pain is there, but it's like a healing, like I loved them and thinking of them type of tears. Okay. I've never been asked that question.
Okay, this is one of my favorite questions. It's so simple, but it's so like beautiful and deep. What or who makes you feel the safest?
Oh.
I'll go first. I want to like start crying right now, but absolutely my sister, who has never judged me, has never looked at me in my worst lights when I have felt like my worst self. And she always lifts me up and sees the best in me. And I try to do the same for her in return, but she just has that glow and that love about her that she extends to everybody. And I wish I had a little bit of that to do for others.
That's so nice. Thanks for sharing that.
I think mine might sound sad to some people, but I think right now I feel safest with myself. Because I think it's taken me a long time to be able to like verbalize what my grief is or like what I need or set boundaries or how I'm feeling and be okay with that. And had you asked me, like, you know, when my mom and sister is alive, I would say them. But now it's been a lot of like shifting to like, well, what do I feel safest here and how do I set that up for myself? Because you hear so much outside noise of like your grief and what it should be or when it should be over and you shouldn't feel that anymore. And it's hard to like just not feel bad about that and like let that in of like what people think it is or how they see it. So I think it's been a lot of just growth of me understanding my own grief and how big it is, but also how then I need to make my life so much bigger and like so much brighter and happier. Despite all that, like large, I don't know, balls of grief. I don't know. I feel like that sounds dirty, but like, and just make my life bigger. So I think that's been a big shift. So for right now, it's me, and that might change. But right now, I feel like my safest is with myself and just like my growth.
Yeah,
that was
a
doozy.
A great answer.
That was my brother is so big into cards decks that I should show him this one. He's really big on card decks. Like every time we have a family gathering, even just like going out to dinner, he always like has a card deck of some sort that asks these kind of deep questions. So I should tell him about this one.
Yeah. And especially if you have someone in your life who appreciates those deep conversations, like perfect. They're even great for like if you like go grab coffee with a friend in the car and you're just driving around, like I thought about everything. So they really could be used in any space with anybody who's ready and willing to have these conversations. But they're not all super like sad and heavy. But yeah, they help you connect with one another, I think.
Well, yeah, those are really good.
Good point with grief, where a lot of people who might support you and love you don't even know how to like touch on these subjects because they're afraid of what that's going to bring up in you.
Uh-huh.
And Rachel and I have tried to be very vocal. Like, there's times that, like, I'm definitely a time and place type of person when I want to talk about my grief, but I am willing to talk about it and I am willing to go into it. I just don't want to sometimes burden the other person with the amount of emotion that might explode out. But these cards I love because they're so, like, targeted and specific and can really ignite conversations I would have never had otherwise. So you had your losses as a teenager, and Rachel and I had experienced our losses as well as like young adults. But how had that experience of being a teenager influenced the resources and support that you're providing now through Girls Gotta Heal?
I think honestly, mostly everything I do is done through the lens of my younger self and what I needed. And you always hear that quote, be the person that your younger self needed. And I really try to embody that in everything. And even when I'm not trying, it happens. So this card deck, my 18-year-old grieving self would have loved it. My 32-year-old self now, who's also gone through a recent loss, would love it. The affirmation journal, my younger self would have loved it. And I didn't always have people to talk to. So these self-help tools would have been really like helpful for somebody like me at that age who was going through it. So yeah, I think I just try to honor that person that I was and who she needed in everything that I do.
I feel like that's what me and Kendall do with the podcast, is especially our first season was really having the conversations that we wish happened more and talking about all these little things. But even as we do that, I feel like we find out more about our own grief because like Kendall will say something like, oh, I didn't think about that. Or like someone asks like a question, you're like, oh, I didn't think that hurt me, or like that's something that I'm holding on to. So it's crazy how much you can still learn. Like it's going to be 11 years since I lost my dad. So it's the longest loss. It's like I'm still learning stuff and you can learn from other people's grief. But yeah, we're definitely trying to do that. And I think this season we're bringing on a lot more people with different perspectives and different things to bring on to the conversation of grief, which I think has been helpful and a learning thing for us too, because, you know, everyone has different goals with what they're doing in the grief space, different products. So I have really enjoyed the season because it's been totally different than our first. And it's been a lot of like great conversations like this.
Absolutely.
So as you are a mental health advocate and now a registered psychotherapist, and congratulations on that. I saw it was like a very recent thing. So congrats.
Thank you.
What do you think are the biggest challenges people face when it comes to openly discussing their grief and mental health in general?
I think generally speaking, a big theme is vulnerability. That's a huge challenge because everybody's relationship with vulnerability is different. A lot of our relationships with vulnerability stems from our upbringing, our culture, what's been accepted. So that's really like a tough point for people to arrive at, to be like, okay, I'm going to inch forward and like just be a little bit vulnerable. And I think shame as well. And that it goes in the same bucket of our relationship with shame can really stem from our experiences, our past relationships. Yeah. And then I guess like lastly, I would say worry that people might not understand. So that holds people back. And that's a challenge and barrier to people accessing support. So I think when someone does access support, it is incredibly courageous and a really beautiful step forward. And I always say showing up is the hardest part. Those are some of the things I've noticed.
I did not jump into the community that's been built in social media around grief when I lost my dad. And okay. I wish I did. I wish I had found that community earlier and found all these accounts providing such great advice and resources and tools. And like your page was one of the first ones we followed when we started the podcast. And I think if that's the first thing you do and you're not in a place yet in your grief to go and like pursue, like really get down into the dirt type of healing, like just following these accounts and having it passively enter your feed is just so helpful to see. Like these are little tidbits, like little tricks you could do, or just little, like you said, affirmations that can enter your kind of sphere and hopefully push you in the right direction to wanting to like tackle your grief in a deeper, more formative way.
Exactly. Yeah.
When I heard your answer, I was like, wow, I feel really called out for the biggest reason why I didn't talk about my grief or anything early on. I look back and when my dad first passed away, because I still had my mom and my sister, I think I had strength or still like the such support that I could be reflective of it. Sure. So I remember I posted stuff basically about being hard, but like what I'm learning and all the stuff. And I think had that only happened, I probably would have been maybe somewhere similar to where I am now in terms of like doing stuff for grief, because I feel like that's where I was heading. And then when I lost my sister and mom, I think I was just like, F all of this, like, this is too much. And I stopped talking about it. I just shut down. And even when my dad passed away, I think it was a weird time of like, people don't get it. I was like 26 at the time. And it's like, a lot of my friends had it. And it's like, that's when I feel like I was like, oh, I'm trying to be going out and doing all this stuff. And it's like, oh, some of these friends are just like fun friends, you know, and they're not the type of friends that are going to be there for you when your dad dies. And like, it was a lot of changing and growth. And I feel like I was taking away a lot then, but then like I still didn't like people looking at me like, oh, that's the girl with the dead dad. And then it's like once my sister and my mom died, I was like, I don't want anyone to look at me, period, because I feel like that's all they see. And that's like a really hard thing where it's like, I don't think people will get it because people didn't get it when my dad died. So like they're definitely not going to get it when it gets worse. And then I think because of that, it's like I didn't talk to people about it because it was just like it's so much. Now I'm like, okay, there are a lot of people that have experienced something similar. It's a shitty situation, but it's like I'm not the only one. And not that I like am downplaying my own grief, but it's like it just like you learn about other people and you're like, you're not the only one feeling it. You're not the only one that gets that type of pain. But it definitely took a while to get there. And I was like, oh, those are all the reasons why I didn't do it earlier.
Yeah. Feels like such a fine line of one, like recognizing in your grief that this is now a part of your story and like this is active in your life, like this is something you have to confront now, versus also not wanting people to just see that about you and just see like death and grief. And I feel like I'm still trying to balance that at the same time myself of like grief is a part of my journey and I'm trying to be more comfortable with that and pursuing my life forward with like the facts of the matter, like my dad has passed away and that's a part of my life, but also being like, I'm not just a dead dad girl. Like, yeah, there's multiple things else about me, like Rachel too. Like all of us grievers have multifaceted lives, but it's funny that like your community or your support system might only see that about you, and trying to balance those things is really difficult, which leads into the next thing that I think Rachel and I have found super wonderful in this time, like since we've started the podcast, since we started the social channels, is finding healing in our grief journey with community, and found this to be such a, I don't know, like it was like a secret. I was like, wow, this is like such an amazing tool to find other people going through the same things. Why did I not think of this before? And you really emphasize the message of collective healing. So why do you believe that healing is stronger when done within a community rather than in isolation, like Rachel and I a couple years ago?
I definitely think that the periods of isolation or doing the work by yourself are also really valuable. I think sometimes you need to vibe alone and sit with your feelings on your own. But I think the gray area is when it becomes too long that you're in that state. I think community offers belonging. I think it offers validation. You just feel seen in a way that maybe your friends couldn't see you. They've had the best intentions, but they really couldn't see you. And I think when you experience things like that, like such a huge loss within your family, your whole entire life changes. You know, who you are as a person changes, your roles change, your day-to-day changes, everything changes. And those are things that sometimes your friends can't understand. So finding a community of people who really understand you is really, really important. And like you said, even if you're at the stage of just, you know, following some pages and, you know, seeing some posts here and there, like those, like that's a little inch forward. Joining groups, those are great things. Group therapy that focuses on grief is also great too. So, but I think sometimes people want to start their healing that route first. And sometimes people want to start individual therapy or individual therapeutics on their own and then make their way to the community. So I really think it's individual, but community is so beautiful and it offers so much. And you can be as involved as you'd like to be. And I think that's the part that people like. They feel like, I want to feel you out first. I don't know if I'm ready. And then you hear other people's stories and you're like, okay, that kind of gave me the boost and the courage to share my story. And I think a lot of healing comes from hearing your story through your mouth and you saying it over and over again. And you just feel so empowered. So I think community can offer you that.
Saying it without crying, I feel like is my biggest win. Like being able to like just like say it and then like I didn't cry. Because like sometimes I say I'm like, oh, this is just getting sadder even to myself, like saying it out loud. But it has been really good. We're in a grief support together. And I'm like the organizer. And sometimes you just like don't know. It's like people don't go to every session. Sometimes, you know, they get busy or whatever. But then like things will show up. You're like, okay, you do actually really like this group. You do actually get a lot from it. You don't want things to change. It's like sometimes it's hard to gauge because you just never know the effect you're having on people or how much they need that space. And it's something that I'm learning as like the organizer too. Part of that was like how me and Kendall connected is like we're a little farther from our grief, but we are the ones, I feel like probably the latest in there to deal with our grief. And I feel like we're also learning a lot from people that are more recent in it. And then I feel like we're almost kind of like the leaders in the group because we share so that other people feel more comfortable to share because it's been longer. So I feel like it's great because like we can kind of tag team in the group to make people feel comfortable. I know that like there's always an awkward silence of like, are someone going to share? And then I'm like, I always know that Kendall will just like step up and share something that like, and then from there, like everyone else shares. It's just something that I've come to get used to. I don't know if people like notice that or not. It's like always like the system that happens, like not planned. I'm like, I know Kendall will say something. And that's kind of what started us being friends in the first place was like that happened without us even having like a one-on-one conversation. It's definitely good to have a community. So you have a background in education, child and youth care, and mental health. How has that shaped the tools and strategies that you share with your audience? Because I think a lot of people, like we share things, but I always try to be careful of like, this is things that may work for you. This is like stuff that worked for us. But in the sense, and we always say like, we're professionals in our own grief. We're not professional. Like we're not you. We're not a professional professional. We're just like professional grievers. So how would you describe what you share with your community? Obviously the education in it, but how would you describe, like say your content and the strategies that you give with your audience are different?
I think that my education and professional experience and lived experience all really, you know, I think through all the years of that, I've gained such an appreciation of people's individual differences through grief and through trauma. And I think that that's a really great thing because for me, when I look at someone or when I'm hearing someone share their story, my mind doesn't go to categorizing them. And I really just listen to hear what's worked for them or how they're coping or how they're impacted, because you and I, well, three of us, you know, we lost our dad, but we've probably had entirely different experiences. We can connect with each other on the feelings, but the experiences and the impact are different. So I think really embracing people's individual differences. And for me, I tailor programming and how I continue building my relationship with that particular client or individual based on that and based on who they are as an individual. And also like understanding things developmentally, like working with children and youth and having education, it makes me really appreciate how when we experience trauma at such a young age or as our brain is developing, that really, really impacts our development emotionally, socially, everything. So I think I just approach life and working with people and creating content in that way where I'm viewing it through a developmental lens and viewing it in a way that can connect with different people experiencing different things.
Yeah, when we create content, like I said, like we try to do like, this might work for you. You might want to just try something if nothing's working, you know, these are different things. I think though also because we always do it, like there's no absolute, like everyone's different. That I think it almost comes off not that we need to be like an authority on grief or anything, but I think there's people that say this is what will help. Don't say this to somebody. Do this, do that. And people really respond to that, whether they're a griever or not, that type of the way that you do it or the way that you share. And we're not like that because in our experience and from talking to other people in the grief community, that's just not how it is. Like something that worked for me might not work for Kendall. She might lean to one thing. I might not lean to that. So we never like to come off as like, this is how you do it. This is the only way. But it is hard because I feel like people respond when you say it and like, this is how you do it. But it's just like, we have to just stay being ourselves and what we think might help or like we want to share just to provide another idea or thought because it might help you. Like Kendall has said a lot of things that like made me think about things differently or change something or try something else. And it like it's something I would have never thought of, but I like it might not work for the next person. And I think that's the hard thing where you see some people just like speaking in absolutes. So I love that you said like you tailor it to each person because everyone is so different and their experience is so different. And like, yeah, like you said, like we all lost our dad, but our experiences are all different still. Like we can relate, but not every little piece of it. You know, we have our own differences. Our pain is always going to be the hardest to ourselves because it's our pain. So I think that's where it's like an interesting balance of we share from our heart and things that we, you know, had helped us or we want to try, but we never do it in a way that's like, this is the only way or this is the absolute. But it is interesting. You see like some people do and like that's what people respond to and like ask so many questions. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to change. Like me and Kendall don't want to change.
Because you know why? Like a lot of our brains are geared toward gravitating to solutions. So if someone's telling us you follow 1, 2, 3, you're going to be good. We're more inclined to try it. But that's also so harmful to someone because when it doesn't work out for them, you're like, okay, well, I'm back to isolating because that didn't work for me. You said it was going to work for me. So I guess there's something wrong with me. So I think your language is so important and it's responsibility of creators, especially mental health professionals or people who are commenting on mental health related issues, to be mindful of their language because you do have an influence on, even if it's one person, if you have such a small following, someone is looking at your stuff. So be mindful of the words you're using. And not everyone will fit into that same box. So
there's I don't want to say like a series, but we had a various different episodes surrounding how people who are never experienced grief or loss can talk to people who are grieving, because I'm sure your experience too, you were told or heard a lot of things from people from a good place, but might have actually been like something like, I didn't actually need to hear that. That wasn't actually very helpful to my journey. And so we've tried to offer different, like, here are things that really would be helpful to a griever to hear, or really helpful in their support, even if like you don't have the right words, because at the end of the day, when you're trying to comfort someone in their loss and their grief, there really aren't the right words to fix the fact that they've lost someone important. And trying to really emphasize that like the action and the love speaks louder than words, and how you support people. And so, yeah, we've done a series around that with talking about, because I have great friends and I love them, and they were so great to me in my time of like deep grief and loss, and I was crying every day, and they were still there for me and still picked me up. But the same thing, like you said earlier, they didn't know how to connect with that. They've never experienced that point of sadness themselves. And so trying to be like, here's a toolkit for those people to help those grievers in their lives.
Yeah, we did preface by saying, like, you know your griever best. So, like,
yeah,
these are just, like, so you don't walk in completely blind. Like, here are some ideas. Like, these are things that we would have liked, or that we did like, that were nice, or that maybe we do now for other grievers. But, like, you know your person. Like, maybe someone will love flowers. Maybe someone wants cookies. Maybe someone wants you to leave them the hell alone. Like, I don't know this person. You know, like, you need to know your person. And we always say, like, these are things that helped us. We're just trying to help you, like, not go in blind. But you're the only one that knows your person. I don't even know who's listening. You know, like, you have to still tailor it. And yeah, I think that's the hard part, where people, like you said, like, if you just do it, absolute, like, we don't know exactly what's going to help somebody. We're just trying to be like, this is better than nothing, because it helped us and this is our experience. But still, like, tailor it to your person. Like, we don't know them at all. So I think that's important for those resources. Like you said, like, you tailor it to each person, because it's just everyone handles it differently.
Which, low-key plug, if you are listening and you know a griever, or someone's grieving literally right now, like, these card decks would be amazing. I would love to get a card deck if someone got it for me. So if you're looking for gifts for grievers, that's a good one. So going back to providing resources, just to touch back on the anticipatory loss, for those who are listening and might see that death might be on the horizon for someone in their life, and they're like prepping for that inevitability, do you have any advice for them listening, or any strategies that could help them? Because if they're listening, it's probably pretty dark.
Yeah. And to piggyback on our last conversation, it might not work for you. I do have some tips and things to be mindful of. But anticipatory grief is a tricky one, and it is a tough space to work through, because you can have all of these things prepped, but when you do experience that loss, it's like nothing you've ever imagined before, and nothing you could have prepared for. But I think generally speaking, know your supports. Know the people that are comfortable and okay with sitting in darkness with you and still showing you that they love you, because those are gems of people. But these are also the people that want to celebrate you on your really good days. So know your support. And I will say that not all of us have that, and I didn't have that. I had completely lost an entire group of friends. I was like alone for like the first summer that I had lost my dad, and I was 18, and it was really tough. So sometimes it takes you a while to find like your tribe and your people. And so don't be discouraged if you don't have that. Just knowing some supports, even if they're virtual supports, like different pages or, you know, different people you look up to. So having those things in place for yourself, and also communicating in advance. So if you're someone who is going to school or you're working, you might feel a little bit that shame and that worry of people aren't going to understand. But for the most part, people are more compassionate than we give them credit for. I don't want to say that happens all the time, but generally speaking. So have conversations with, you know, your professors, your teachers, your boss. Just let them know what's going on, because you don't know how you're going to be when that loss comes and how you're communicating. You might just drop off completely. So have those conversations. And I would just say generally be kind to yourself, because yeah, change is hard, and just be kind and patient with yourself. Don't feel like you have to rush to get back to a certain part of your life or anything like that. Like, this is your moment to feel and be present and just work with what's in front of you. So be kind to yourself and patient.
Yeah, I always say, when people say like, oh, I could never imagine, I'm like, don't even bother, because if you imagine, it's way worse. Like it feels way worse. Like, don't spend time feeling sad and anxiety for like what it might feel like, because it's gonna feel way worse. And there's not, like, it's just, it's so much more painful when it actually happens. Like, I used to stress about, like, just mythical, like, in middle school, like, if my mom didn't answer her phone, I'd freak out. Like, oh my God, something happened to my mom. That was wasted time, because when it actually happened, that hurt way more than whatever I could have pictured in my head or thought it was going to be. So I'm like, don't waste time feeling that emotion, because whatever you're feeling isn't even close. So just, like, when it happens, feel that. You're not going to have a choice, but it's going to happen. So, like, just don't try to think about what it's going to feel like, because that is way...
Focus on what you can control.
Yeah.
Like I said, your supports, your communication, those are things you have control of.
Yeah, because that... No control over it. So what's next for Girls Gotta Heal? Do you have any new projects or initiatives or anything coming up that you want to share?
I think I'm due for a new self-help tool. So we'll hopefully be working on that this year. Last year, I introduced some in-person events. So I'd love to get in that space this year. Everything I've been doing for Girls Gotta Heal has been online. So I've done support groups and things like that, which have been so great and beautiful, especially during like pandemic time. We're connecting with people in different countries. Like, it's been awesome. But I really like the in-person, like, connection. There's just such energy you pick up on people from people. So doing more in-person events and just creating more content based on what the community is needing and me and how I'm changing as well. Like, I'm just developing a new version of myself, and I've seen so many versions of myself from the start of GGH to now, just really honoring her and where she's at and shaping some content around it. And just improving.
That's so exciting. How can people who are listening right now find you? What are your handles on social media? Where do you want people to learn more about you?
Yeah, so my Instagram is Girls Gotta Heal. My website is girlsgottaheal.com. I also have a podcast, the Girls Gotta Heal podcast. And those are the main places you can find me.
We'll also add them in the show notes. So it was so amazing talking to you and hearing about your journey with Girls Gotta Heal and grief and all these things. I think it's really great to have the perspective of someone that's actually like a registered psychotherapist speak on it and give their opinion on it. I think we have a lot of people sharing their grief from their own experiences, but it's nice to kind of, I think, set a level of like, okay, this is what it is when you're actually like a registered professional and not just a professional griever, as we say. This is our tagline. Thank you so much for coming on, and we're so excited for everyone to listen to this episode. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you. Did you experience loss at a young age or struggle with compounded grief? Let us introduce you to Carm. She's a registered psychotherapist and founder of Girls Gotta Heal.
Carm's mission is to help young women navigate loss with resilience and grace. Don't miss this conversation for some great practical